Hello, welcome to the Doomer Optimism podcast. Today I have Brendan Graham Dempsey, who I've known about for a little while. Actually, we kind of met digitally last week on the Limicon panel, which an episode which will also be out soon. And I've for a while appreciated Brendan's work. He's, I guess, loosely in the metamodern scene, and we'll discuss kind of what that term means. I've thrown it around a couple times. I've heard you talk about kind of, you know, a spirituality of emergence. I know you have the Metamodern Spirituality podcast, which I've just gotten into, and I've enjoyed. And you run a kind of permaculture retreat center. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of a brief intro from my side of kind of what I know about you, but why don't you introduce yourself, kind of maybe 5 minute, you know, version of yourself and what's alive for you these days.
First, thanks, appreciate it. I really appreciate the invitation and happy to get into some fun things in this conversation. Introducing myself, I think like most germane is probably around like the metamodern stuff in the permaculture retreat center. The metamodern scene is something I've been hanging around for a while now. First kind of found that term back in like 2013 and have been pretty involved in the various sort of iterations of that as it's progressed. And starting around 2020, I think, when this really kind of burgeoning online scene started to grow and emerge, got pretty involved with that. And I'm very interested in what metamodernism can do to provide a kind of helpful map into the future out of our current doldrums and maybe orient us towards something a bit more hopeful, a bit more optimistic. But I love the name of this podcast, Doomer Optimism. I just think that captures something so essential, that there's this like, there's this need to acknowledge the profound precariousness of our current situation in so many ways, institutionally, but obviously ecologically. And yet there's also this appreciation that we can't just slide into a kind of like hopelessness or nihilism about that. We have to do something. And so metamodernism really captures a lot of that sensibility for me. I'm sure we can talk more about that, but that's sort of the angle that I'm coming at this through. And and the Permaculture Center, which is sort of an aspirational, to live up to that term would be to be wonderful. That's sort of a goal for what we are doing here at Sky Meadow, which is this like 115 acre homestead in Vermont. That is also a retreat center and also, as of just recently, an institute for kind of metamodern thought and trying to explore the nexus between like systems based and complexity based thinking around things that matter, basically, broadly conceived. And certainly what matters is survival and how we eat and how we organize our lives, to say nothing of the whole meaning crisis and the spiritual component, though you brought that up as well. And so Sky Meadow Institute is really about looking at all those issues through the lens of complexity and through systems. And of course, permaculture plays a big role in all of that. So that's a very brief kind of introduction to me and how these things, relate to each other.
Very cool. Very cool. So why don't, I think a lot of our audience probably hasn't heard this term, metamodernism. So for the, if you could give a kind of a brief description of what it is, mm-hmm. Maybe geared towards, our audience, which, I think a lot of people are familiar with permaculture. Why don't you give, why should somebody care about metamodernism?
Yeah.
Why should the DO audience care about the sure. idea, not just as a kind of a, a label, but as a set of ideas?
Right. Well, I think, I think the best angle into this is I've known a lot of people who look at the current crisis that we're facing and respond to that with a sort of like kind of misanthropic, self-hating nihilism. They're basically like, humanity is a scourge, it's a virus, and look what we've done to the natural goodness and beauty of everything. It would be better if we didn't exist. And it just kind of leads to this sort of hopelessness and this sort of meaninglessness of everything that we are about is somehow bad, and everything would be better if we weren't a part of it. And a lot of the conversation, at least that I've been privy to be honest, around, yeah, the ecological situation has tended to move in that sort of direction. That's a very hard thing to grapple with when you both look at the facts and you look at where we're at and you look at where we're headed, and there's an element of truth to that. You're sort of like, God, we really fucked everything up. We suck. For a lot of people, this has become more and more of a sort of framing device for their whole lives and the way of looking at civilization and humanity writ large. But as I was just saying too, there's something deeply problematic about that at many, many levels, actually, that like just at a pragmatic level, working with that perspective, you're just not going to work with that perspective. You're just going to give up, essentially. You're gonna broadly look at things as being a waste of, I mean, your very existence at that point is just going to invariably make things worse. And people are very good at sort of working themselves into a downward spiral of like, well, the more I try to solve this problem, the more I'm using my rational mind and the more I'm going to make it worse. And so the problem is going to, proliferate and expand by the very attempt to solve it and all this stuff. And so I think, yeah, probably your audience will have a sense of that kind of discourse, because so much of it is rampant.
And right, let me interject one thing.
Yeah.
There's definitely kind of what we just call the straight up doomer side.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you encapsulate that. There's also kind of the there's you know there's different responses out there. There's the trad return, and there's some strains of that in doomer optimism. Although there's a lot of strains in doomer optimism. And then there's like the eco-modernist, right? There's the we're going to tech our way out of this, and there's also some strains of that in doomer optimism, and sometimes these strains kind of come into some tension. How do those these different strains, right? So you have kind of like the doomer, maybe they advocate degrowth, but humans really are a scourge, and maybe we should just off ourselves versus no, we have to return. Maybe this has a religious component. I know this has been a big theme that you've been exploring lately. I'm thinking of someone like George Monbiot, you're right, the British Guardian columnist who's advocating for, I don't know, like lab tech meat and kind of out farming and right. And he's also very aware of ecological climate crisis, et cetera. And that's also a very dominant strain in this kind of, reaction space. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, so I mean I would just briefly suggest that we could fold all of those sorts of things into a potentially modern meta-modern approach to this sort of issue. But yeah, like to give, I think people first have to have a little bit of a sense of what that entails, right? And so maybe I should just jump there that like a meta-modern approach is one that tries to, give credit to and to be to try to seriously integrate these various different kind of modalities from history. So the pre-modern, the modern, the postmodern simultaneously can interact in certain ways where you can get sort of the best from each of those different lenses or those different modalities. And that's kind of what the meta-modern is gesturing towards. And so you get something that's kind of a synergistic product of all of these things. A lot of this originally starts in the arts, and so you wind up seeing this kind of oscillation between modernist and postmodernist approaches, and you get these interesting dynamics like ironic sincerity or pragmatic idealism. And I think you could apply these kinds of lenses to our ecological crisis, right? Where you can do both of these things simultaneously. You can have the awareness the knowledge of how screwed we are, but you can also be idealistically striving to still make a meaningful life and to try to fight against those negative forces and all of that. And this can kind of exist in sort of a kind of strange, almost paradoxical, liminal synthesis between these two seeming opposites. So what you just named, like the trad returners versus the modernist, we can just solve this through technology. I would say that like both of those sensibilities are somehow going to be interwoven into like a kind of meta-modern approach to this issue.
Would you say kind of like the degrowth doomer would correspond to the postmodern? So you like if the pre-modern is the trad return, the modern is the lab tech meat, and the postmodern is kind of the doomer degrowther. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Degrowth, I mean, it depends on what how we use that term, right? Like, I would say the people I've known who I would kind of confidently put in that sort of postmodern space, they've tended to be more the folks that I was naming at the outset, who are just like human beings are a cancer, So I don't know if you call that degrowth, you call that annihilation.
For the record, not all degrowthers are like that at all. Many,
Yeah,
many are
I'm
positive
sure.
and stuff, but there is a strain of in the degrowth, I think, that would correspond to that.
Gotcha. So yeah, in that case, I would put that in the postmodern camp. So yeah, there is also though the sense of a lot. I mean, I don't want to by saying that suggest then that the postmodern approach to this whole thing is sort of the least of value, because actually in many ways it's the most of value. The whole awareness and critique of the modern system that we live under is essentially a postmodern critique of that system, right? It's the fact that the modernists weren't taking enough into account when they set up these systems to consider all of the externalized costs and all that stuff
Here's
that
another
now.
tangent, real quick. At least in my kind of reading of it, we're seeing a resurgence now, or a initial surge of right-wing postmodernism. Right, so postmodernism kind of started on the left, and now we're really,
Definitely.
especially with the rise of Trump and a lot of right-wing deconstructionists. Is that fair?
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah. Okay. So it's interesting. I don't know if that fits into this of like. Kind of a left-wing postmodern, now right-wing postmodern, and they're all interesting but problematic in their own special ways. And now, that I feel like that's kind of burning itself out a little bit as well.
I hope so. I mean, I don't quite see that. In fact, I mean, I hope you're right.
Maybe
I
not.
just I see I think that we're going to be dealing with this like right-wing postmodern thing for a bit, especially depending on how the politics bear out over the next year. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think that honestly, when you really get down into the nitty-gritty of some of this stuff, these categories shift a little bit, right? Because a lot of those trad returners you were talking to, probably a lot of them are actually, kind of right-wing postmodernists, which is like, and what I mean by that, right, is that postmodernism generally conceived is this sort of critique of modernism, and a way of approaching the issue of modernity by relativizing it as just being another cultural code of equal value or maybe even less value than other cultural codes, right? And so that's sort of like a tool that a lot of people can use coming from a trad background to be like, hey, look, we actually can use postmodern logic as a way of undermining all this modern stuff that we hate, but we hate it because we're traditional in our thinking, and so we can just use postmodernism. So you get this like V shape of like, from like a developmental angle where people just totally bypass the modern stuff, jump to the postmodern and use that to reaffirm their traditionalism. And I don't know, I don't know if that's best to call that pre-modern or post-modern pre-modernity or something, but it's a different approach, yeah.
Right. Okay. So relating this all of this kind of cultural, stuff to permaculture, would you say permaculture as initially conceived, was it initially a meta-modern kind of movement, or was it something else? And or was it, would you say, more like modern or postmodern? And what would a meta-modern kind of permaculture look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So very important to my framing of metamodernism, like many like many other people's, is this issue of complexity, and kind of systems thinking and complex systems thought. And from that angle, if you look at that as sort of a particular paradigm, then yeah, if that is directly related to sort of meta-modern thinking, then to the degree that permaculture is about systems thought applied to organic and biological and sort of the biosphere and the kinds of systems that are operating in that context and how they all relate to each other and how we can relate to them. And it's a very meta-modern sort of thing. I would say that there's a lot to that. I do think, though, I mean, the way that it's sort of played out culturally, I think it's permaculture has tended to attract people who are into more kind of postmodern orientations to things, right? Because which makes a lot of sense, right? If you're looking at the world and you see it's broken, and we're largely existing now in the sort of modernist, increasingly dystopia, then you kind of increasingly veer towards postmodern critiques of that system, and then to the degree that you're oriented towards solutions and you're trying to make sense of that, yeah, you might land in something like permaculture as being something that's productive and an alternative. But it is interesting though. There's some tension here actually, and I'll just use this as an example to outline some interesting things we could explore as like conceptual differences that I think should be unpacked a bit. So, for example, there's a classic image, right, of like the food chain that puts humans at the top and then everything's under them, and it's sort of this pyramid, right? And then there's this alternative approach that sort of like puts the human just somewhere in the mix of everything else. This is like a meme now, right? And so, and it's often framed now as like, ego versus eco, right? So like the ego places the human at top, and then it's like a food chain. Everything leads to humans. And then in the eco conscious framing, humanity is just a part of the ecosystem like every other animal. And that, I think, it captures a certain distinction of the way that moderns versus postmoderns tend to approach this. And to the degree that people come to permaculture because they really get the distinction that's being drawn there, I think that there's this attraction to permaculture from postmodernity and postmodern thinking. But, and here's this kind of interesting thing that would be interesting to explore a little bit, is I think that framing is wrong. Like meaning that the eco of framing that like human beings aren't just another animal in the rest of the system. And I think that when you appreciate the full trajectory, you can see that something like that food chain does actually emerge in a metamodern context on the other side of that, but in like a non-naive, non-anthropocentric sort of way. Because, and I, this might be a controversial point, but I can explain this at some length. I think one of the big differences is that in a postmodern context, there's a lot of emphasis on biodiversity. And if you just think of the idea of like diversity as an idea of how it plays out in culture and in the culture wars, et cetera, right? It's a sort of radically relativizing sort of a thing, but it also is like specifically oriented towards trying to upset and upend more kind of modern or even pre-modern ways of like oppressive hierarchies and stuff, right? So it's this like leveling thing. But one of the things that's interesting about complexity is that you actually do get the return of hierarchies in a meaningful way. Right, that there actually are like hierarchical systems that show up in permacultural contexts and in biomass essentially. And so one of the things that I'm interested in actually is that I don't think that we've fully meta-modernized permaculture enough yet. I don't think fully people get that, like, once you take this really seriously, complexity replaces biodiversity. Like biocomplexity is what we should be thinking about, not just biodiversity. And when you do that, you wind up with a different sense of how that hierarchy plays out. And here's the important part that I really want to develop a little bit here, is that human beings being at sort of the quote unquote top of that pyramid does not mean that they're like, pharaohs that like just exist in a relationship to their like slave subjugates that just bring them everything and they consume everything. That is more of like that modernist approach of like, oh, we'll just eat everything because we're at the top of the food chain. The metamodern approach through complexity is that because we are the most complex things with a particular kind of consciousness and a particular kind of way of using rational thought, we are in the position of responsibility to participate in nature's kind of most radical forms of biocomplexification, that we can actually use our unique spot in not just the food chain, but in sort of like the broader evolutionary ladder of existence to help facilitate maximal biodiversification and biocomplexification. And that rather than thinking about that sort of hierarchy as like we control everything, which we totally don't, we are in a unique position to facilitate growth and fecundity and vitality. And I find that a very beautiful message, and I'm happy to kind of dig into that more. So anyway, there's just some preliminary thoughts on that idea.
No, well, it's interesting. I mean, there's a number of people these days who permaculture type people who talk about humans as kind of stewards or humans as a keystone species, or potentially, have the potential to be a keystone species, right? With this idea of stewardship. And to me, that is a more metamodern approach than the ecodiversity thing. But interestingly enough, that framing also really kind of resonates with like the trads, right? And there's also interesting movement in permaculture where it started more kind of a lefty anarchist thing, and now a lot more reactionaries, conservatives, right wingers are also very drawn to permaculture as well. And there are certain kinds of framings that I don't know if this is like a pre-trans fallacy or something, but there are certain kinds of framings that resonate with both, you could say, the pre-modern and the meta-modern,
Yeah,
or the
definitely.
but not quite in the same way, but there's this kind of shared resonance, which causes a lot of uncomfortableness for some people.
Well, and I think it's worth becoming clear about what how they actually do differ, right? Like the trad version of this is more or less what you read like in the book of Genesis, like chapter 2, where it's like God is like, yeah, I made this great garden, everybody, and now Adam, you've got to tend to it, and you are like my special creation that like is and ultimately though you do control this. You like you are you have dominion over it is sort of the language that's used in this sort of pre-modern framing of this. And so and that was a very influential framing for most of human history. One Well, I'll just say that. And so that's like one version of that, but that's not at all the version that the metamodern framing of this suggests, which is and I could really spell out exactly why all that is the case and the different worldviews that you kind of go through and thinking differently about these things through time. But that's like that's way over here. But then you have to deconstruct that idea and actually realize that, oh wait, all that's just like a that's a myth. Right, that didn't actually happen, and that's not how this is all set up. But actually, we have from modern thought this whole evolutionary development through time that puts human beings in a certain position, right, to be able to use technology and all this stuff. Well, so that's this modern view, and then the postmodern view comes along, and then obviously, as we've been talking about, critiques that modern view. It's like, hey, good luck. How'd that whole technology controlling nature thing go? Oh, okay. And then that lands in this sort of like, we just gotta, as we were saying, either off ourselves or just like give everything over to nature. There's this sense that like nature has this natural inherent truth or wisdom to it that we are just sort of perverting. But what that framework misses is complexity, which is that actually there was something that was appreciated, intuited, you could say, at these previous levels where there was this sort of what's initially kind of the great chain of being and the pre-modern to like there's this evolutionary ladder in the modern world, and then in the meta-modern context is it's we live in a complexifying universe that there's this grand arc of cosmic complexification underway that moves from matter to life to mind to culture, to use like Greg Enriquez's model, and that we are at actually the top of that process. We are the most complex things that we know of, and that we but that's because we are animals, we are biological organisms, and we are just matter, right? But we're also this cultural language using entity that can think rationally about things. So we're all these things, and it's because of our virtue, the virtue that we are all these things, that we are dependent on all these things. So like thinking that we're somehow above them or separate from them or transcendent from them misses the whole point. It's like literally it's like shooting yourself in the foot if you think you can just like ravage all of the natural resources and not ha you know it's so once you realize that human beings are all of these things together, that we are intricately bound up with all these different layers of complexity, but we do have novel capacities in our position as being particularly complex, that if we were to leverage that capacity towards trying to maximize fecundity, then that's something that no other organism can do. And I find that a very beautiful and promising, hopeful message that can, I think, replace that postmodern narrative of we're just a cancer and need to be destroyed. And I think the sooner we do that, the better, because that's not helping anyone, right? No one is going to be converted to the cause of ecological sustainability or changing your lifestyle, blah, 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 if all you are motivated by is the fact that apparently someone's telling you that you're a cancer. Believe me, I've had this conversation many times, and that doesn't work so well, right? So, whereas if you tell someone you are, and then you can frame this across those different, modes in ways that can maybe resonate with different groups of people, right? Maybe you do want to talk to more trad-oriented people and say, hey, look, you're a son of God. Go steward the land and use your rational soul in Aristotelian terms to, cultivate nature into more flourishing fecundity. Yeah, if that resonates, great. But then you can also say to the modernist, hey, you are the product of evolutionary history. Like, go use your rationality, your reason, your logic, and apply that to, a scientific orientation towards reality in a way that can increase fecundity. Okay, great. And then you talk to the postmodernists and you say, hey, you're right. Those modernists really messed everything up. Like, they don't get it. It's all about this diversity and this growth and the permaculture thing. So, anyway, the metamodern angle on this can kind of speak across these different divides and frame this story in different ways for ways that work for people.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but there's an interesting kind of synthesis or collaboration, you could say. I think between some, between some modernist thought and postmodernist thought, but it's the idea that it incorporates that humans are bad for nature, and so we should kind of, leave it alone. But it also wants to maintain the modernist kind of style of life, and so it's like, okay, everybody needs to move to the cities, right? We need to get out of nature, make things as efficient as possible in the city using our modern technologies, and that's the way forward. And this is, I think this is probably the dominant view in the environmentalist space these days, right? And then, but then you have kind of the permaculture response, which is, well, and this is incorporating a lot of pretty recent research showing, for one, that there's not really these days anything, resembling a pristine wilderness. Right, like most of the rainforests and wildernesses that we're familiar with, are basically advanced, food forests that co-evolved with, human groups for thousands of years, right? And so you're drawing in there, and I wanted to bring this in too, is like both the left and the right have their return narrative, right? The right is kind of traditional religion, but for the left, it's like indigenous, right?
Yeah,
Indigenous is
exactly.
like this big thing, like, have you become indigenous again? But there it's, you have this kind of, I would say, this unholy collaboration, in my view, that I described between the modernists and the postmodernists. And then, but by drawing from this kind of pre-modern, kind of, sensibility using modern research, we can say, actually, no, that's not the case, right? Humans have always, have been part of nature for a long time, are part and parcel of nature. And it's really about the structure of culture and society and paradigm that determines whether we become this, self-destroying extractivist species, or we become this, complex, mutually complexifying species.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, and actually, and I find that kind of growing research around, like what you were saying about how like those incredibly biodiverse areas like the Amazon rainforest, for example, is like the fact that we're realizing how much interaction with human cultures that is sort of a product of that's a I'd never made that connection, so I appreciate that, because that's a great point, is that when our go-to example of like this radical biodiversity in the world that still exists is actually the sort of thing that is what we're talking about, which is like people relating to nature in such a way that there's sort of synergy between these. So that is encouraging. I mean, I also think that I would add to that this thing, and I mean I'm curious what you think about this and your viewers, that like there's this notion that just that I think is false, that nature left to its own devices will just naturally produce the most biodiverse and biocomplex thing, right? And I think that's what we're kind of getting at, is like, well, no, actually, like there are ways, and permaculture is like the example of this, that like when you intentionally bring systems into interaction with each other, like the chance of that happening, well, by chance, is like very minimal. But when you have some kind of rational ability to do this in an intentional way, you increase the chance that that happens. And then you actually get dynamic synergies between these systems in a way that just doesn't tend to happen as frequently in nature. And so that presents us with the idea that like human relationship to nature is this really beautiful catalyst for this thing. And then it's like, well, what is this thing? And this thing is biocomplexity. It's like all these parts relating to each other to create a whole that is greater than the sum of those parts. And the way that you can also view this through the lens of like energy use and energy efficiency and all that. And I think we're just on the cusp, or just beginning to appreciate this dynamic, right? And I think that so far, from what I'm familiar with, a lot of the permaculture scene isn't as hip to and isn't as aware of, because it does seem to run a little bit, retrograde, or to their narrative of things. But I think if we can just break down those walls a little bit and see and appreciate this, it opens up the permacultural narrative to all these different groups that we're talking about. And it allows different people a way into this in a way that we just need. Like it, this is what we need. And the fact that this is coming at a time that allows us to tie this into all these different perspectives on the world is perfect, because like we need to stop obviously ruining the biocomplexity, but we also need to cultivate it. And I remember I was reading Ben Falk's work, and for whatever reason, this image came into my mind of being shepherds of biocomplexity. Like the idea of like a shepherd is something really cool, where like in a similar way, like sh well, I'll just throw that image out there. Like how and to say, or to suggest, like how different could the narrative be, and the whole dynamic playing out right now, if instead of, oh, I know, this might offend people, by the way, sorry, but like, oh, I know, I'm gonna go block traffic and get a bunch of people mad at me, or I'm gonna go destroy beautiful works of art to draw attention to this cause, understandable for the reasons and all that, but like, if that is where the discourse is at, yeah, good luck trying to get a lot of people onto your side. Whereas if you come to them and you say, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we became shepherds of biocomplexity? And if you were in a vital part of vitality, like there's a whole different way we could be framing all this. And I think it's much more hopeful and much more pragmatic simultaneously.
Going back a little bit, you mentioned kind of metamodernism bringing back hierarchy in a new way, and I want to just check with you. I think this is how you think about it. If we're talking about increasing biocomplexity, and we're talking about kind of orders of complexity, that brings in this notion of emergence as well, right? The notion of emergence has these like, orders of complexity. Is that the kind of metamodern hierarchy that you're talking about? Like, we're not saying, we're not talking about hierarchy in this kind of, one, unidirectional kind of top-down notion. We're talking about it in these kind of orders of complexity that were, all a part of in different ways. And humans happen to play a special role, but we're not the masters of the universe.
I think, thank you for an opportunity to kind of clarify that, because that's really important. Like when most people think of the idea of hierarchy, they might think of, oh, well, there's like the CEO at top, and then they've got like their underlings, and then there's like the managerial folks, and then there's like a bunch of just sort of the workers or whatever. And there are various forms of this sort of like, or you go back further and you're like, oh, there's the pharaoh at the top, or the king, and then there's just kind of this hierarchy from the pre-modern world that like, this sort of like this mythic framing of reality that conceived of things in such a way that justified a certain kind of oppressive political hierarchy and a certain oppressive political structure as being some kind of given wonderful thing. And it all proceeded from the monarch or the autocrat and then went down to their like nobility and down to the peasants and all that stuff. That's kind of classic notions of hierarchy, and it's like, nope, that's not what we're talking about. What we are talking about is it is a relative degree of scale, but here we're not talking about that sort of hierarchy. We're talking about how many things are interrelated with each other. How much relationality is there, right? So this is like the thing, like people who hate hierarchy love interrelationality, right? So, but they don't often think about it as a hierarchy of values as being how much relationality is there, right? You show up and you look at a situation where you got some autocrat and it's very sort of top down, and it's sort of like, yeah, that's we don't like that. But then if you approach a system where there's all this dynamic interrelation between these different parts, and they say we do like that, we'll put that in a hierarchy, which is to say, another way of framing that is that there are more ways to there are ways in which more things can be subparts of holistic systems, and that if we value holistic systems and holistic thinking, then we want to maximize the amount of interrelated systems with each other. And that's what permaculture is. I mean, that's like how can I relate my composting system that's going on here to my hot water system going on here to my stove and my cooking system, and then blah 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 blah, and then I use the wood chips from blah blah blah, and it's just like it's this everything, there's like this closed loop way in which all these things are interacting, and the more things that can interact, the more ways that like one, you're conserving energy and you're like successfully distributing resources in the most sort of like optimal way, so you're minimizing waste and you're maximizing relationality, and all these things are beautiful, right? And if you just think about that, like the more we can do that, the more you're sort of like interrelating different systems. And what's interesting about nature is that it does this organically through evolution, is that it's bringing more things together into more dynamic interrelated systems. And so like you look at a eukaryotic cell, and there's a lot of stuff going on in there that is more complex than in a molecule, right? It includes those molecules. Like people who are familiar with the integral theory stuff will get this, is the whole transcendent include logic, because that's basically kind of what captures that idea. So like whatever's including more as it transcends, it's able to have these greater emergent properties, which you named, by including more within it, and in the process you're able to basically do a lot more with all these greater sense of interrelated parts. So that's how nature works, right? And that's what the story of evolution is that there is actually a directionality to the evolutionary process towards greater complexity. And when you appreciate that, you can also see it that like, while that might sound kind of wooey to people, it makes sense for the same reasons that permaculture makes sense, that it's the most efficient use of energy. That actually, like, as things complexify, they increase in what's called free energy rate density. So you're able to have more energy coming in, doing more things, moving more things around, organizing more things in the most kind of maximally efficient way. And so there's this like innate logic to evolution itself and thermodynamics itself that kind of pushes in this direction. And so long story short, that's a kind of framing that I'm thinking of hierarchy, which is more like a holarchy, if people are familiar with that idea, more things nested in other things. And so yeah, that is both what permaculture is about, and it's also what evolution's about, and that's why there's a natural way that this works better than what we're currently doing, which is incredibly wasteful and inefficient and non-complex. And yeah, so the more we can mimic nature in that regard, the better.
Okay, so if the goal of evolution is to maximize complexity, if our role is to be shepherds of increasing biocomplexity and cultural complexity, let's say, and if we're talking about kind of some of the transcendent ideals from these different kind of modes of thinking, right? So you can say the pre-modern, I would say beauty is very highly regarded, in the pre-modern mode. In the modern mode, maybe it's efficiency. Maybe a certain kind of mechanical beauty, you could say. I'm not sure. In the postmodern, it seems to be like justice, justice from oppressive systems. So are you saying, is there kind of a transcendent mode related to this with metamodernism? Is it just increasing complexity, or but for what purpose, right? Like,
Yeah, that's
are
a
we
great
doing
question.
it for justice? Are we doing it for beauty? Are we doing it for, or you could say, or you could say the goodness, right? The transcendent, right? That's also very pre-modern, long-standing idea. What is this? What are these transcendent values besides just increasing complexity?
That's a great question. Big question. I gave a talk on the Stoa a while ago, a couple years ago now, on metamodern spirituality, and actually I used to kind of a similar taxonomy to what you just gave, where like, but I said that the I totally agree that like the modern is all about utility and efficiency. I would say that the pre-modern is more about piousness, that there's some kind of like there's a way to be that is sort of the righteous way to be, and it's related to a kind of kind of natural religious order of things. So you go from like pious or piety to utility. To in the postmodern, I see the virtue as being diversity, because if you dig into that justice a little bit more, it becomes actually a very hard thing to really talk about. And I don't know if you've ever had these kinds of conversations, or if your viewers have, but like, how do you talk about justice in a way that this is kind of one of the enduring challenges of postmodern thought, because you're trying to do justice to all these different modes of being, but then when you do that, there you kind of lose justice in the process, if that makes sense, right? Because like, let's say you're like, hey, let's do justice to these different perspectives, where, for example, we have in the West this notion that certain we have certain ideals that we hold, but these aren't universal ideals, because there are other societies that do different things, right? And who are we to say that they're wrong? So I don't know, like in certain kind of more radical contexts, right, you could say, well, is genital mutilation wrong? Well, who's to say? There's not like anything written into reality, and certain tribes do this, and so who are we to say that they're wrong, right? So you see what I mean? Like, ideals like justice actually become very difficult to uphold in a postmodern frame. And so what you can uphold, though, is diversity, because that's a genuinely relativistic frame. There can just be more of things, and people can look around and they can say, well, if we have more perspectives here, we're just going to say that's better. And so I would say that taxonomy goes from piety to, utility to diversity. And I would say
About
that,
the good, the true, and the beautiful. What are those, right? The core, the these kind of like
right, the transcendentals. I mean, so I would say that, I mean, if you wanted to get into this historically, right, like those go back to Plato. So there's an element in which these are pre-modern notions that sort of get abstracted and then actually reified as these things. And then as you come into the modern period, these kind of break away. This is the Habermas thing about the differentiation and modernity of these different things. These become separated into, art and legality and all this stuff. In postmodernism, good luck trying to talk about transcendentals. People are going to be like, that's not real. And then is there logic in them even saying that? I would say in the metamodern framework here, I do think complexity is the thing that comes next, but I do think that ties to transcendental sorts of concepts. It's not just complexity for complexity's sake, it's complexity for all the things that come with complexity, right? So what comes with complexity? Well, greater sustainability, greater flourishing, greater depth of conscious awareness, greater autonomy, greater sense also of community. I mean, com you know,
Would you
also
say
does gr
it kind of integrates all of these kind of core themes of the previous mode? So if we said, like you said, piety, or if we were to say, beauty, for example, I mean, permaculture, mature permaculture food forest is very beautiful.
Sure, yeah.
It's just,
Yeah.
one might say it's good if it's also productive, right? So if it's beautiful, but it's also efficient, right? Or it's utilitarian, and you were talking about how complex systems, one of their aspects are that they're very efficient, or they can be. That's also incorporating kind of this modernist ideal as well, right? And it's producing diversity, but it's not in a relativistic sense, but in, this, complexification sense.
I love that. I think that's totally true. I mean, this is why, you're succeeding in all these ways that these earlier, perspectives were maybe succeeding, but only in one particular avenue, right? But if you're able to bring these all together, then there's something very beautiful about that synergy. And there's also ways, though, that like, I mean, if you really want to dig into it, there are interesting ways in which like every code never really lives up to its own logic either, right? So like, yeah, maybe in the pre-modern there was a sense of beauty, but like there was also a lot of ugliness associated with that, whether that's moral things that we would look back on and be like, ooh, that was terrible, or just like, there's lots of ugliness there as well.
Yeah,
In
I
the
mean, the Black
modern
Plague
world,
wasn't very beautiful, I'm
what's
sure.
that?
I don't think the Black Plague was very beautiful.
Right, exactly. Or, exactly. So, or just like the fact that like in the past they just threw their shit out the window, and that was just how you dealt with, a lot of that back in the day. And not, for the record, not to knock, the incredible also pastoral beauties that did exist. So it's a complex, nuanced thing. But this is the point, right? That we can't fully romanticize any of these particular things because they also often produce their opposite. So like in the modern case, supposedly utility and efficiency is the thing, but only if you don't account for externalities, quote unquote, right? And then
Yeah,
it's like
if
as
you
soon
don't
as you
account
have
for
that,
pollution and exploitation
right?
and
And so then once you're like, hey, wait a second, we're missing a lot of the picture here. And when you fold all that in, you're like, hey, this actually is really inefficient and really ugly and all these other things. So, and of course, with the diversity aspect, there are ways in which that kind of negates itself as well. 'Cause again, a lot of the performative contradiction that comes in where like, oh yeah, we want a bunch of different perspectives, just not the wrong ones that we disagree with and all that. So, I think that this metamodern approach to these things does hopefully bring in the best of all these. We get that beauty that you're talking about. We get the efficiency, we get the diversity, but in a non-relativistic way. I think it's a very beautiful framing of all that.
Nice. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing, at this place. So tell us about this retreat center. Tell us about kind of what your vision for the land is, in terms of kind of metamodern permaculture and land and the people.
So it's called Sky Meadow. It's 115 acres here in northeast Vermont. Been living here for about 3 years now. There's a whole kind of prehistory from before I was here. It used to be like a dairy, an old dairy barn, and the previous owner bought it and renovated it, turned it into a retreat center, but also put in a bunch of little cabins and a little cob hut and some really interesting structures here, and put in some gardens as well. So it's been an organic garden, the garden beds here for the past 25 years, which is really remarkable to be able to work with that kind of a resource. And in terms of the vision, it's a couple of things. So I'm aiming to make this space, one, a spot where people can hold events and do things that are geared towards the stuff that we're talking about. And I did this, I'm started this Sky Meadow Institute thing to kind of be the kind of contextual umbrella for metamodern integral complexity events that happen here. So on the one hand, in terms of the vision for the space conceptually, it's very much about providing a hub or a home for this community that we're broadly a part of, like as you said, we met recently through Limicon, which is part of this liminal web community, which is sort of an overlapping, got bits of Integral and Metamodern and Gamebee and all these other different movements of folks who are trying to respond to the crisis of our moment. And so, yeah, there's an educational component to that, where we want to here at Sky Meadow, create a space where people can come to do events that are geared towards that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's a place that's also trying to enact the sort of stuff that, people could be doing that actually like just goes beyond like the sort of talk element of this, but like the implementation side of stuff. Yeah, I mean, sort of the biggest component to that really is just like the gardens, as far as I'm concerned, of like having of producing your own food, and then this food is also food that gets included in the in the meals for the retreats that happen here, and trying to just sort of close as many loops as possible. And so it's a functioning homestead. It's got, we heat with wood, and it tries to have sort of a very minimal footprint. We've got animals here. We've got alpacas and sheep. We're going to be transitioning probably to solely sheep pretty soon. We got chickens, and it's just the whole thing of living here is about, living with the seasons. And pretty soon I'll be going out there and mucking those stalls and heaping up, a big compost pile for the following season, which I will also, then put on the garden. And everything just tries to, close that loop. So feeding chickens, they poop, we eat their eggs, the whole thing, right? I mean, so a lot of people will just kind of get that from what this is all about. But it is also aspirational too. I mean, there are more things that we can be doing. There's always more things that people can be doing. So we also want to use it as a spot to learn, to experiment, and to kind of invite opportunities to kind of deepen our relationship with land, and also to provide the land as an opportunity or a space where people can get that like that meaningful sense of like community and home and depth and rootedness with each other in this community, right? Where so much of this stuff is happening online. And so a big part of the vision is like, how do we do rootedness in this digital age where our communities are diasporas all around the world, essentially. So that's kind of my mission for the place, is trying to be a home for that sort of stuff to happen, where people can come together, get their hands dirty, work together, and there's residencies to do just like permaculture learning slash, work in the landscape, cleaning things up, working in the garden. There is meta modern spirituality retreats where we're tying together ideas about complexity and complexification, and like going outside and working in the garden. So anyway, a million different things, but that's sort of a rough outline of some of all that.
Nice. Yeah, I mean that sounds great. One of the it's interesting, I think back in around 2020, I was, pretty involved with kind of the it wasn't called the liminal web then, but that space, right? I was, I was doing a different podcast and, just part of that dialogue. And one of my growing critiques of that whole space was the lack of embodiment, right? And situatedness. I started reading people like Wendell Berry, and I'm just like, gosh, there's this whole element that's missing within me, that's missing within the space, right? And then I kind of just went in a very different direction, and with collaboration with others, Doomer Optimism came out of that, at least from my angle. And it's great that what you're describing, you're trying to bridge these worlds, right? Which I think these are two very important elements of, one way to put it is, in a way it's kind of bridging, where we come from, in a deep historical sense, from the land, our relationship to the land, and it's still part of us, part of our genetics, part of, our culture in subtle ways. And, all of this knowledge that we've gained through modernity, that, all this knowledge that we've critiqued, and now we're realizing that we're at the precipice, of, existential, risk, and we're at some kind of precipice. And so how do we bridge all these together to do that? And that seems like that sounds like you kind of tuned into that as well, and these different worlds that we kind of have to bridge now, or else we're not going to make it.
And for me, I mean, spirituality plays such a crucial role in all this, which is something I've appreciated about the broader conversation space, is I think a lot of people get that too, and the whole meaning crisis aspect of this. And So for me, a big part of all this is relating to these practices as spiritual practices, as like getting in the garden is a spiritual practice. Getting your hands dirty and just connecting that way is a sacred thing. Yeah.
Slaughtering an animal that you're going to eat is a spiritual practice, or
It
it's
is, and that's an interesting, element to this as well, where I can respect both. I mean, I'm kind of an all of the above sort of approach person, where like, hey, maybe, well, not to derail the current line of thought too much, but like, if people want to make cultured meats, maybe there's some value in doing that because, yes, not everyone can immediately jump to living on a homestead. But at the same time, in terms of like what's better, well, I think, yeah, like having free range animals that live full, rich lives, that are able to do that, but then you slaughter in a humane way and process in a humane way and all that. That's a better approach, right? I think. And so, but being able to appreciate that both of those things can happen simultaneously, but yeah, to that point of like appreciating what that really means, what that really entails, right? It forces you to rethink your relationship to the whole modern system, and it, which in a fascinating way, right? Where people, I think everyone should have to kind of grapple with that of like, could I have killed this animal, right? And if you can't, you have to just think more about what it is that you're consuming. I think, and so, yeah, being able to fold that into your actual practice, and it also doesn't have to be direct all the time either, right? So like we source a lot of the, I think probably at this point, all the meat that we use here from like a local farm, and we get like fresh raw milk and that sort of a thing. And so actually extending that idea of systems into your community is this whole other way of this happening too, right? There's like the homestead is its own system, but then there are systems of systems. You've got homestead, relationships and different farms working with each other, that you can actually do that in a way that feels really good. Morally, ethically, but sustainably, beauty, all that stuff is happening simultaneously. So anyway, I might have lost the thread a little bit, but that, yeah, it's a, yeah.
Well, this feeds into, I guess, my next question. I mean, we started Doomer Optimism kind of more, a little bit more focused on kind of homesteady stuff. And I think pretty quickly, their conversation evolved towards community, right? And connections across communities as well, and we started bringing in concepts of like, we started with kind of a concept of localism, but then it was like cosmolocalism, right? How do we, horizontally connect across communities? We started bringing in concepts of bioregionalism and kind of, what is kind of this coherent scale, right? And what are the different kind of coherent scales? But a big thing of what we talk about is like, this is a nice, this is a nice synthesis, nice vision, but what is our theory of change, right? How is, what is our theory of change of how, we can bring more people on board, but we can help, kind of help society navigate, through these very turbulent waters ahead. And so do you think about what you're doing or just otherwise thoughts about what we've been talking about, as kind of a pragmatic theory of change, right? Like you mentioned, like not everybody can live on a homestead, right? There's a lot of issues with the political economy of affording land and people can't, don't have time, and because of, they have, they're working two jobs in a minimum wage, you can't, all of these things, right? And so we're broadening this out to like, let's broaden it out to kind of the political economy, right? Politics, right? How do you see this interfacing with those aspects?
Gosh, yeah, big question. So there's a lot there. I'll offer some preliminary thoughts, but obviously these things can go deep. And then also, there's whenever individuals talk about systems, this is our big problem, I think, is that it's like very immediately it's sort of like, yeah, we can have a bunch of ideas, but like systems are systems. And so trying to top down approach to those sorts of things is very difficult. All right, caveats out of the way though. Big thing I think is just that like everyone can do something. I think that that's like really important, even if that's just like get a house plant, right? Like if you're starting from a mode of just radical, you're in that modernist dystopia, right? And then like think about what, how much of nature can I relate to? How much can I bring in? And how much can I just begin to tend to? What, maybe you can't be a full-on shepherd of biodiversity or biocomplexity, but maybe you can, I don't know, just like, you know, move in that general direction. So yeah, think about just that zone of proximal development sort of a thing. You know, in terms of, yeah, just greenifying your living space in a way that you can sustain. But yeah, I was just saying, basically moving from kind of the you know, bottom up and top down elements of this, that it, you know, if you can start with wherever you're at and just trying to make some local improvements in that register, but then consider that expanding into different levels. So from greenifying your space to, you know, working with maybe if you have like you know, an acre that you're on that you're in, and turning that into some space that you could use to develop some kind of an organic system and that sort of a thing. And so yeah, that is sort of an initial way of thinking about this. But also, you know, I think people are considering the sorts of alternative living situations that is very real, right? Like a couple of people coming together trying to buy a plot of land and doing something like that in an intentional way. You know, a lot of these things are sort of classic things. I one of the things I would say though is that I would stress, well, all right, there's two things to say here. I'll just real quickly say that I think that a lot of people feel more stuck than maybe they really are. And I want to encourage people to consider that it is very possible to like shift your living situation, move to a different place, what have you. Not saying it's easy, not saying that that's even available for most people, but just that there are different situations that people can find themselves in. And I've known a lot of people who feel like they're too stuck in too in their situation in a way that's really inhibited them. And I just want to encourage people to consider the possible alternatives in a way that might not be as unattainable as imaginable. The other thing I wanted to say that though is immediately to counter that by saying I also recognize like yes, there's a huge privilege component to all this, and to also immediately counter that by recognizing that focusing on the privilege though also has tended to create this sort of weird Ouroboric postmodern thing where like postmodern people will look at the modern world and say, oh, we can't do this, this is broken, this is unsustainable, people really need to try to find more sustainable ways of living. And then when people start talking about, hey, what about homesteading, what about, you know, permaculture, then they immediately say, oh, but that's a privileged thing, and you know, like not everyone can do that and this sort of thing. So it's sort of like, okay, right, like which element of that are we going to focus on, and how productive and generative is it if we lean into, you know, harping on the privilege component of this in a way that can wind up sort of yeah, negating the possibility rather than supporting people's potential flourishing. So but both of those things need to be held simultaneously, where we can't ignore that aspect of the situation, but we also can't, I don't know, overplay it. I will also there's a great book I should have found the title of it so I could re recommend it by name. But it's something about like the thrifty homestead. That's basically, it really breaks down the numbers. It's one of these Chelsea Green books that I highly recommend, that was very inspirational for me, where basically the guy's like, look, I make $30,000 a year, and he kind of presents his whole kind of you know, all the resources he's really working with. And it can be very, I think a lot of people might consider homesteading as being out of reach in many ways, and I just want to always kind of emphasize that, you know, that these things can be possible. So anyway, I just wanted to name all of that in terms of as a theory of change. Obviously, a lot of that is very individual focused. It's kind of bottom up focused, so we also have to focus on top down stuff. And here we need to think about two primary aspects of the situation, which is the institutional frameworks that we're operating in and how we change those, and also thinking about changing the culture. So changing the culture is a kind of interesting middle mesosphere of the conversation, where individuals really do have a profound impact, or can, on that aspect as well. And so I also want to invite people to really consider the ways that having conversations or making art or putting out podcasts or writing books and doing all this stuff to like change the conceptions that people have really is a necessary component of the systems change aspect. And so even though some people will talk about, oh, what are we really doing? We're just spending a lot of time talking. Well, spending a lot of time talking is a really valuable thing when people are digesting these ideas and thinking about how they relate to their lives. And I really don't think people should downplay that. So I wanted to make a plug for that. And then changing the institutional aspect of this, which is the most difficult thing to do, also needs to be a huge part of this, right? So like, what kind of pressure do we put on, you know, our governments, the food systems, what sorts of things are we buying? What are we affirming with our own, you know, personal purchasing power, but what sort of things that changes we can make by, you know, pressuring our members of Congress or by running for office or by et cetera, et cetera. And not all this, you know, is going to happen in a broken political system. So what do we do outside the political arena? What sort of activism do we do? Protests? What sort of, you know, and then all these things relate to each other, art and protests and then movements and culture and all this stuff. Honestly, I don't know. That's the best theory of change that I have for a lot of this, is because, you know, we're talking about working within systems and trying to change systems. It's an invariably or inherently difficult, even impossible conceptual challenge, you know, and that's what makes it such a knotty problem. So not I, yeah. Solution. Yeah. What's that?
Not a closed form solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just throw out that for now. Maybe just one last thought is like work within the system to change the system, you know, and don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. Don't let the ideal be, you know, something that undermines some progressive movement in the right direction. So trying to find the right ways of orienting yourself. And I think the optimism is key. And I'm primarily focusing on this at the cultural level and the individual level, because that's what I feel like I have the most leverage in and the most kind of passion for. But I think this is an all the above strategy. And I think that on the cultural level, we need a change of narrative. We need a change of story. And so that's why I'm excited by a lot of the kind of metamodern intervention into some of these conversations.
Nice. So we need to wrap up soon. I'll just note that, yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about kind of, you know, there's some people in the space who are like more on the outside game where we need to develop parallel institutions. You know, one common example of this is like, get out of the public school system, do homesteading homeschooling cooperatives. Other people are like, no, we should work within the public school system itself and form from inside. And, you know, and there's, I think, some tension, but there's also, I think, potential for, you know, lessons learned, I guess, from both, right? You can learn about new, you know, pedagogy in, you know, kind of alternative homeschooling spaces and present it, you know, bring it into, you know, your local rural public school or something, right? And so there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of it's contextual, it depends on where you are and all that, but there's a lot of room for both an inside and outside game. But I guess just to wrap it up, you know, I want to promote your Metamodern Spirituality podcast. I've recently started listening to it just in the last week or two. I really enjoy it. Is there anything else that you want to alert listeners to of projects or
things? Well, thanks for that. And no, I mean, I appreciate this opportunity to talk about this topic, because I do tend to hang around most in the metamodernism conversation space and or the metamodern spirituality stuff. And obviously those are passions of mine. But I want more of this, more talking about homesteading and permaculture and systems of relating complexity to food and all this stuff. And so I appreciate this opportunity. And for the folks who are probably going to be coming in from that angle, I would just alert them to Sky Meadow Institute, which is devoted to that sort of a thing. It's trying to bring all these things together under one category by saying a systems-based approach to the things that matter most, because then we're talking about meaning, but we're also talking about spirituality. We're also talking about, you know, your food matters a lot, and, you know, how we live matters a lot, what you do for work, these sorts of things that matter. Like, we want to get that right. And if we have a complexity lens on it, I think that that's really the key for the way forward. So yeah, I would just plug, if people are interested in this, reach out about Sky Meadow Institute. And if people are in the general area and want to partake in the residencies that we do, which are free. They're just work exchange residencies. We're going to be doing one this April and one this fall, or yeah, like kind of a spring and harvest sort of season thing. People can come live in a cabin, you know, in these beautiful little wonderful Thoreauvian huts, and you know, and just but we'll kind of prepare the land, you know. We'll get the space ready for the spring and kind of get things set up and, you know, do some compost moving, whatever. So if you're looking to get your hands dirty and relate to people in the scene, I really would encourage people to check that out. If you go to skymeadowinstitute.org, they can look at the April spring residency and the fall residency, probably be the most germane.
Very cool. And you are Brendan Graham B1 on Twitter. Last name GRAHAM, and that'll be in the show notes as well. This has been great. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And so
Yeah, likewise. And I'll just say I'm new to Twitter. I mostly hang around on Facebook, so I'm probably a little bit more responsive in that space. Yeah, looking to make more connections. But this was great, and I really appreciated the opportunity. So thank you so much, my friend.
yeah,
Appreciate it.
absolutely. It's great to get to know you. Until next time.
Till next time.